Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM. Listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to Community Conversations. This is your host, Phil Hoff, along with my co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Hey, Phil.
How are you doing today?
Just wonderful. How have you been?
I'm good, but, you know, it's December. It's white out. It's been bright out. I hope we record this a few days ahead that we still have that brightness, but it reminds us that winter is here. It's coming too, isn't it?
It sure is. What have your late fall activities been? Not the usuals. We're going toward winter.
No, but I still managed to get some low-level hiking in. And, you know, always this time of year, it's nice to be aware of what's out there in the woods, listening and hearing things. And I've got a song I want to play for you, Julie, from one of our feathered friends. I want to see if you can identify this one.
Okay, I hope it's not too hard, Phil.
All right, so who do we have?
Well, it sounds like the sounds of spring more than the sounds of winter to me, but I would say it's a chickadee, wouldn't you?
I think it's a black-capped chickadee. What do you think, Rich?
Mm-hmm. It is a black-capped chickadee, and Julie's right. That is kind of spring, a spring song, but they make those calls all year long.
Yeah, it's aspirational. So
they do.
Why don't you go ahead and introduce our guests and topic for today?
I would love to. Well, good morning, KR. Why listeners, and as you know, it's Phil Huff and me, Julie Calamine, and we're doing our recorded weekly community conversations, and we're both very thrilled this week to have the topic of the annual Audubon Christmas bird count, and we have two very special guests that are going to join us to talk about it. The first one is he's a perennial favorite here on KRFY, and it's Rich Del Carlo, who's a birder. He's the event organizer here in Sandpoint, and he's an arborist, too, which makes him up in the trees among the birds all the time. Hello, Rich.
Hi, Julie. Hi, Phil.
Yeah, great to have you. And listeners, please bear with us. We're all on Zoom in various locations, so we've got a little bit of a delay is what I'm thinking. Thanks for joining us, Rich. And then our second guest today is John Isakoff. He's also a birder. And John, you are the professor, founding chair of the Environmental Studies Department at Gonzaga. Hello, John.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us, John.
Yeah, it's great to have you both. So we are having a bit of a sound delay, but we'll bear with it. It's the way it happens in the times of COVID and Zooming. Rich and John, I want to welcome you both, and I'd like each to tell me just a bit about yourselves. Tell me how you came to be living here in the region and also how you became interested in birding. Let's start with you, Rich.
Thanks, Julie. I have been living in the Sandpoint area, North Idaho, for 30 years or so. I've basically been interested and excited by birds my whole life, but been a serious birder for the last 40 plus years.
Excellent.
A beginner.
Yeah, just a beginner, right. There's still lots of things I don't know.
That's right.
John, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I came to Spokane about 17 years ago because of the job at Gonzaga. It was a nice opportunity. And how I got into birds is as a kid, I was growing up in Manhattan, and my parents split up, and I moved out to the kind of out what was then the outer suburbs, the woodsy suburbs. And I didn't have any friends. I didn't have anything to do. There was no internet. There was no cable TV. So my stepdad put up a bird feeder, gave me a Peterson field guide and a very old pair of binoculars and said, go have some fun. And I was off to the races, I guess.
Now, the original Audubon, for whom the society and bird counter named after and all, if memory serves me right, grew up in the northern part of what we now call Manhattan, only then it was 5 miles outside of the city, in what was a rural part of the island.
I think of him as being from Pennsylvania, but we'll have to go check that. We'll have to go check that. I thought he might have been. Was it Manhattan or was it Philadelphia? Maybe.
No, it's Manhattan. There's a long section of an autobiography to George Bird Grinnell that goes into the whole history of Audubon Park, where Grinnell grew up and shared space literally with the Audubon family. But anyway, that's a topic for a whole nother day. We're going to talk about birds today, and maybe we should set this up or continue or segue into the Christmas bird count and what that's all about. And Rich, do you want to go into the history of that a little bit for us?
Well, I can tell you what I know. Basically, it was the bird count as we know it today started in 1900, following some years of when they used to go out at Christmas time, and actually the contest was to shoot as many birds as they could, but then I can't remember who decided that that was a really bad idea and said, let's just count birds anyway. And that's how it was established. And so it's been, 120 years that it's been going on. So lots of very, very important information and data and that has been accumulated over those many years.
Rich, why does it happen during the Christmas season? Why does it happen in the month of December?
Well, I think that goes back to when that initial contest was. It was basically Christmas Day, that before dinner they would just go out and annihilate birds, and then whoever had the most in their pouch won. So I think that's how it became the actual Christmas. And then we're able to get a really great history of wintering birds throughout the country, and then it also occurs in all of the Americas, so all the way down to Central and South America as well. And then the dates that they run it are December 15th to January 5th, I believe.
Is there an advantage to the December time frame from the standpoint of less tree leaves in the parts of the country that have lots of tree leaves, or less competition for other things going on? Is it helpful to have it now?
Well, I think it's helpful from the standpoint of just that, having that data of basically all the birds have migrated at this point. So you've just got basically local regional birds in those particular areas. Although the counts in Central America and South America, of course, would have wintering migrants.
Mm-hmm. Guys, we know how it came about. It was maybe a political statement about annihilation of birds, or a response to an awful large number of bird killings, et cetera. But why is it important now? Why do we continue to do the annual bird count? John, maybe you'd like to answer that one.
Well, now it's been folded into the citizen science rubric. It's a great way to get people involved. And the data is used to see, long-term population trends. As Rich said, in the northern areas, the northern half of the U.S., In Canada, it's we're looking mostly at resident birds. But also, you know, in terms of where the migrant birds are spending their winter, there's an awful lot in this along the first couple hundred miles of the southern U.S., Florida, Louisiana, the Gulf Coast, Texas, Arizona, and so on. So we get a sense of those wintering birds that breed further north and go south, but don't go all the way south, so to speak. And that information is very useful for tracking the long-term populations.
And so how long have each of you been involved with the winter bird count?
Rich, go ahead.
I started doing it in California probably 40 years ago at the out on the at the point on out on the Point Reyes National Seashore, which was just a really cool spot for birds. And there were lots of things that would show up there that wouldn't necessarily be anywhere else. So that was always a fun thing, was to try and find some rare birds and things that may not, you know, always be there.
I am definitely a newcomer to the CBC world. I think the first one I did was in 2007 or so, maybe 2008. And I have only done them in Spokane and Cheney, Washington. So I don't, and I try to do them, you know, every year that if I'm in town, I do them. Most of my family is still back on the East Coast, so I'm often out of town during CBC season. And, you know, people have said, well, why don't you do CBCs over there? And I would where my in-laws live in central New Jersey, they have sort of like too many people. I know it's like a problem we don't have here, but they have like, you know, more than a sufficient number of volunteers and they don't have any place to put them.
So give our listeners some context for this. How many of these are there across the country and how many are there in our area?
Well, I can jump in since I did a little cheat sheet here. In 2019, actually, I don't have the total number of bird counts. There were 79, just over 79,000 total participants. But that doesn't tell you there how many count circles there were. So I don't have that. Maybe Rich has a better sense. Many hundreds.
Yeah.
Right. And the count circles are a 15-mile or a 7.5-mile radius from a determined point, 15-mile diameter. So there could be, you could put a count circle anywhere as long as it doesn't overlap with another count circle.
Mm-hmm. Are most of the count circles well established? Do you all try to repeat the same areas from year to year, Rich?
The count circles are established and they have to be, you know, there is kind of an approval process. You just have to go through the process of establishing it, but they are established. And that actually adds to the credibility of the, you know, of the data that's collected. And obviously when we go out, we're not able to see or identify every bird every time, but, even with that, you're still able to figure and establish trends and, basic populations.
So Rich, you organized one here locally in Sandpoint. Can you tell us where the count circle is, or is that like guarded information so it doesn't get disrupted?
No, the center is basically downtown Sandpoint. And then like John said, it's 7.5-mile radius from there. And the count is broken up into four sections.
How many other bird counts are just in the Idaho Panhandle and also out toward your area, John, out toward Spokane? I know of three. Rich, how many are there?
Yeah. Well, there's I know that the three northern counties, Kootenai, Bonner, and Boundary, have Christmas counts. I'm not familiar with, I know that there's one in Newport, Washington, and certainly Spokane, and I'm not sure beyond that.
Sure. John, how about you? Do you know of others?
So, yeah, there's actually, depending on how you define the panhandle, there's one called the Indian, I want to say Indian Mountain, which is near Hebron State Park in that general area. It's very small, just a few people. There's definitely one in Moscow. And then on the, and there's also Coeur d'Alene. There's a Coeur d'Alene CBC. On the Washington side, there's one in Pullman. There's Spokane. There's Cheney. And I think the next closest one may be Moses Lake. There's been one in Moses Lake for quite a number of years.
So we have a lot.
And Newport, as Rich, and Newport, as Rich mentioned.
And so for our listeners who might be live streaming us, is there a centralized location, a website or Facebook page or something folks can go to for across the country to see if there's a local bird count from wherever they might be listening in?
Yeah, there is. And I don't have the exact URL, but if you Google Audubon Christmas bird count, Audubon Christmas bird count, it'll pull up the National Audubon Society site. And then there'll be a link there that can show you exactly what the closest bird count is to you. I thought of one more. There's one in Colville as well.
So,
Julie, I was just going to say that's the great thing about those, the count is that you can Google, like John said, he's going to, you know, potentially go to the East Coast to visit family. You can find a Christmas bird count anywhere in the country and sign up for it. They're always open to new participants and people that are just excited to get out and see birds.
And how does someone do that? Do they simply go to audubon.org and sign up? Will they find you that way, Rich, or Roger up in Bonner's Ferry? Will their information get to you that way?
Yes. But I am encouraging people locally to contact me directly this year. So we can, you know, I have an idea who will be along given the situation we're in now. But you can access anybody's email or whatever access they give through the Audubon Christmas Bird Count.
So now
website.
They're not all on Christmas Day. In fact, different ones are on different days. Rich, why don't you go first and tell us about the local one you're involved in and the date and time and how to contact you to sign up. And then John, perhaps you can do the same thing.
Okay, great. The Christmas Bird Count this year will be December 16th. And we will be meeting at 7 a.m. at city parking lot. There'll be no indoor pre-count meeting or post-count meeting. We will be having an outdoor campfire and gathering afterwards, and whoever wants to come can contact me about that. And my contact information is 208-290-1405, and you can just text me your name and contact information if you're interested, and I will get back to you with when I figure out how many folks we have. You know, it's going to be different this year, but it's still going to be an amazing, wonderful time outside. And you know, like you had mentioned in the introduction, we've had some gorgeous days, and we'll see. So you never know. It won't be, in our shorts and t-shirts, but we'll have a good time.
So before we start talking about all the details of the bird count, and there are a lot of them, I'd just like to back up for a moment and ask a bit more about this, the data that's collected. We've got an entire country, more than an entire country's worth of data that gets collected every year, going for 100 years now. I'm sure it's grown. And just wondering, who uses the data and how was it used? John, would you like to address that?
Sure. So this goes in, there are a number of major global and hemispheric organizations that track long-term bird populations. And in the Western Hemisphere, the three big ones are the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, which is actually global, but it's in the United States, the National Audubon Society, and Bird Studies Canada. And those three organizations tend to share most of the relevant data that they have. There are other citizen science projects. eBird.org is now the largest citizen science project in the world. And it's, in a way, it's like a Christmas bird count every day because you can use it to do checklists anywhere you are, anywhere in the world, and put the data into a database. In terms of the data itself, these are used by those organizations, Cornell Lab, National Audubon Society, Bird Studies Canada, who tend to work collaboratively to track the long-term bird population trends. And for example, the Audubon Society every year puts out sort of its like top 500 most highest species of concern, species that have shown a certain amount of decline over a certain period using a whole bunch of different sources of data, one of which is the Christmas bird count data.
Yeah, and so the picture for birds, we hear about it, at least I hear about it on TV, on the radio, and generally it's a story of populations that are in decline. And we know it's because of lots of reasons, many, many reasons. Could you share some of those with us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm actually slightly unorthodox in my take on this, in that a lot of the headlines are talking about climate change and bird populations. Now, there is no doubt that climate change is affecting bird populations, and there is little doubt that the net balance of that is negative, although it's not all negative. But I really want to emphasize that the number one, number two, and number three problem that birds are facing is habitat destruction, and not climate change destruction, but logging development. And in both the breeding grounds in the northern hemisphere and especially in the southern hemisphere where the birds go for the winter, conversion of natural ecosystems to sugar and coffee plantations can be devastating to some species. Some species spend almost the entire species will spend its winter in what would be the equivalent of one county in one country in South America. And if that county gets converted to coffee production, you're going to see a good chunk of that entire population decline.
Mm-hmm. It seems like you can drive around the country and take a road trip and see how agricultural impacts on the Midwest have altered habitats, and that certainly has changed, I'm sure, the patterns that birds use those, and probably in a generally negative way. But are there some bright spots? Are there some things that birds have adapted to or populations have taken advantage of in places?
Some. I mean, this is where we talk about the net, you know, the balance. There are some species that are highly adaptive, like what we call the domestic pigeon is actually a wild bird, the rock pigeon. And it is a wild bird in Eurasia. And rock pigeons have done amazingly successfully with urbanization. It's like they were evolved for it, even though they really weren't. European starlings, you know, love just about every kind of human altered habitat. So there are, and the European house sparrow. So there are some species, but, you know, there are two problems. For every one species that thrives due to development or agriculture, there are many, many more that do not. And so it's a net loss. And then the other problem is that those species start to overpopulate out of control and then create their own problems. So for example, European starlings are invasive, and they take, you know, crucial cavity nesting habitats for species like woodpeckers and bluebirds.
Or I'm thinking like the Canadian geese at City Beach, which abundant, but with that abundance also comes impacts.
Canada geese have become extremely adaptive, and in the eastern United States in the 1980s, during the era of the big overblown corporate park with the grass and the fountains, Canada geese stopped some of the populations literally stopped migrating and just became year-round residents. They're doing well. Each one of these cases is sort of its own case. The question is, are the geese that are not migrating taking the niche that's filled by something else? And since they were living on golf courses and corporate parks, the answer is no. So they themselves weren't causing additional ecological damage, although I can tell you for sure that the people who had to clean up after them don't want them there.
So true. You know, and I know tundra swans can be a problem, but Rich, I'm going to toss this one out to you because I don't know if this is happening in our panhandle yet, but I've heard from some friends in Minnesota, where I'm originally from, that there seems to be an eruption of evening grosbeaks coming south this year, and along with some great gray owls. Has anyone in this area seen anything like that?
We are seeing we're not seeing tremendous numbers of evening grosbeaks, although there are some around. This year is a big year for pine siskins and
yes,
red crossbills and even white-winged crossbills. And so there are some finch type birds that are definitely a little more, it's called eruptive, where they rely on big seed crops, and kind of, if they run out of food in one area, then they kind of move into other areas. And I think that's what's happening now with the pine siskins. And, you know, evening grosbeak numbers are actually decreasing. They're not sure why, but so, and that could be why we're not just seeing big giant flocks of evening grosbeaks right now. And as far as great gray owls, I think that they are a little more frequent over in Montana. We don't really see them here. And I haven't heard yet of if there's an eruption of snowy owls. Sometimes those show up pretty far south. And I have not heard if people are seeing those yet. So, and, you know, and this year we have a huge crop of berries, mountain ash berries, which typically bring in Bohemian waxwings. And I have not seen or heard of any yet, but hopefully they do show up this year.
Well, this seems like the perfect time to move into the details of this year's Christmas bird count. And so I'll start by asking both of you, how will this year's count protocols differ from past years? Rich, you've already told us that there won't be that big breakfast before we get going, but what else is going to be different?
Probably a lot more vehicles will be going out. It depends on how I want to kind of establish how people have been in contact with other folks, and if they have kind of a bit of a pod of people that they hang out with and are comfortable. Unfortunately, I think we'll be using a lot more vehicles, which is unfortunate because of the driving, and then also more people in the car is just a lot more fun, as you know, when we are driving around and everybody's looking and it gets excited when they see something. So we won't be necessarily be able to have some of that, but we will be out of the car a lot too. So
oh good.
Is that, do you need a little more information on that?
Well, so, for listeners that might be concerned, I don't think so. It sounds like we're going to follow our basic, to the best of our ability, the COVID protocols and work on social distancing and, totally. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, good.
So, John, tell us about the Bird Circle you're organizing. Any particular shifts, changes this year due to the COVID?
Well, I actually am not an organizer of a circle. I'm just a rank and file participant. But I can say the Cheney, Washington bird count is on December 19th of this coming up this month. And then the Spokane Christmas bird count is on January 2nd. I have been in touch with the organizers, and the difference is pretty much exactly as Rich said, which is there won't be a meeting before, and the traditional afterward dinner at a specific place is not going to happen. People are free to carpool as they feel comfortable or not. I mean, you know, there are guidelines that everybody are encouraged to follow, but for example, if there's a family team, they can be in the same car because they live together, that kind of thing. There won't really be anything different in those bird counts other than different from what Rich said. One thing I should note is the Cheney bird count is noteworthy because it encompasses Turnbull National Wildlife Refuge. So it's not just the town of Cheney is a nice town, and the Eastern Washington is a nice campus, but Turnbull is a nice place for birds.
Yeah, very good.
That sounds fun.
We heard a little bit from Rich about some of the things he's been seeing or expecting to see. What might you expect to see at Turnbull this year?
Oh, at Turnbull? Well, I actually do part of the public part of Turnbull. We actually have some access. The Spokane Audubon Society has gotten access through the refuge biologist to go to some of the non-public places, but I do the public part. You know, it varies from year to year. If there's heavy snow cover and all the water's frozen, the number of birds is a lot lower. Like it could be 50 or even 90% lower. One of the really awesome things that I had discovered a couple of years ago was some wintering pygmy owls and a wintering saw-whet owl. You know, northern pygmy owls are these cute little small birds that breed in the foothills and mountains all throughout the Idaho Panhandle and Eastern Washington. But in the winter, they'll come down to lower elevations. They'll use like the pine forests like of Turnbull, which is not normally where they breed. And they turn pretty diurnal, meaning they're daytime hunters in midwinter. So you could see them in the daytime. The saw-whet owl, I actually did have to go back after dark. And I did what's called playback. I played a saw-whet owl from my iPhone in a spot where I thought it would be, where one might be, because there was a real good thicket. And lo and behold, one responded, which was kind of neat. That's not something that you can expect to happen, but if you get lucky, it can happen. In terms of, you know, the regular birds, we see ravens and magpies, chickadees, nuthatches, woodpeckers. Those are kind of universal year-round resident birds throughout the Idaho Panhandle and Eastern Washington.
So I have to interrupt here for a moment back to owls, because Rich knows that a pygmy owl is something that's always on my list for the Audubon bird count, and I've never seen one yet. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that'll happen this year. Otherwise, I may have to join John and Cheney, where it sounds like there may be more of them. But did you all hear the interesting story about the saw-whet owl that was secreted in the Christmas tree that went to the Capitol? What an interesting story. They don't know where it came from, though.
Yeah. Yes, I did hear that.
Any comments?
It was the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, actually.
Right.
It came from Oneonta, New York, which is fairly close to
where
I went to college. Yeah, and the little bird was in there. You know, the whole thing is put on its side on a truck and trucked down there, and it just hunkered down in there. That's it, it's kind of funny, but it's not that surprising when, you know, they are agile, very adept little birds, and
hitchhiking.
It hitchhiked, yes. Yeah.
Are there any other, so any other special birds we might hope to see in the panhandle for John or Rich, something that would be a special bird for either of you?
Well, you know, one thing that shows up in very small numbers, but we usually see one or two on the Christmas bird count are northern shrikes, which is a bird that breeds up in the boreal forest and then migrates south a bit. And the other name for those is butcher bird. And they actually are like little raptors. They actually catch mice and even little birds, but they don't have the talons to hold on to it. So they actually use a hawthorn spine or even a barbed wire fence to hang it on so they can eat it. So and they're not very common, but once in a while we see one or two on the count. And then of course, Bohemian waxwings, potentially lots of ducks.
So I've got to ask you, as we look at the individual events coming up, folks who are listening, some of them I'm sure are really excited to sign up for this year as they've done it before. Others are going, man, that sounds interesting, but I don't know, maybe I'm not quite ready for it. What skill levels are you looking for? Can you accommodate a beginner?
Well, we're open to anybody and any skill level. And I try and have competent birders kind of leading each group, people that are confident in their identification. And, you know, so much of identification is actually understanding where birds are at a certain time. And so being able to kind of sort through some of those difficulties, but basically anybody is welcome. And, you know, you get a chance to even just see a mallard through a spotting scope is, you just can see how beautiful those birds are. So,
And Rich, speaking of gear, you just mentioned a spotting scope. Is there anything that a person would need to bring if they decide to join you?
If they have binoculars, that would be awesome. Typically there aren't extra pairs of binoculars. There's usually one or two scopes, which people just, you know, take turns looking through. And we'll see how that looks in this new environment too. But binoculars, definitely warm clothing, your own, you know, food and beverage.
Bird book, your own bird book if you've got one.
Open mind.
Open mind. And John, sure. John, the same question. This is an activity for the circles you've been in, oriented to all levels of ability.
Yeah, this would be a rough year for somebody with basically no birding experience to jump in, only because of COVID. Because typically, what would happen is exactly as Rich said. The organizers would pair a beginner with a much more experienced birder, and they would carpool. But that's not something that should, again, if people know each other and they make a pre-existing arrangement that they feel comfortable carpooling, that's fine. That's within the guidelines. But probably not good to promote people who don't know each other getting into cars with each other because of COVID.
Right.
And especially in Spokane County right now, our cases are kind of hitting record numbers every day. But in a normal year where there's no COVID, yes, we want beginners, and beginners would be paired with people who are more experienced. And the idea is everybody will have a good experience and have some fun.
So bring your own bird expert.
Yeah, I guess one thing I would add to just from experience to what Rich, as Rich said, warm clothes, I would always say, assume it's going to be even colder than you think it is, because when you're standing around, you know, you may dress for what you wear going to work or moving, you know, walking around outside or doing yard work. But when you're just standing there, it gets cold really fast. And so I'm always cold. I don't know why, I just am. And so just assume whatever the forecast is, prepare for it to be 10 degrees colder. And if you need to, you can strip off a layer.
Always good advice.
Yes, I so agree. I've experienced a cold Christmas bird count. I have a question about folks that might be interested in birds but can't join you. Like, what if it's a person who lives somewhere within the radius of the bird count and maybe has a bird feeder? Is there any other way to participate if you're not on the actual bird count?
Definitely. And in fact, feeder counts are part of the can be part of the count, where they would just submit their sightings to me or to whoever the in the count circle. It does have to be within the count circle, though. It can't be somebody calling from Clark Fork or something to report. But they would. So yeah, bird feeders are actually one of the best ways, because right now that's kind of where the action is, unless we stumble onto a little mixed flock of birds moving through the forest.
And so, for clarity, that participation would best be done on the same day as the count, on the 16th, or within some time frame before and after.
It would be on the count day.
Okay.
I have a fun statistic on that. It's a quick one. From last year in the United States, there were 53,828 participants afield, but 6,564 at feeders. So just over 10% of the total participants in the United States last year were what they call feeder watchers. And as Rich said, they do have to be in the count circle, and it does have to be on the day of the count. But it's not an insignificant thing, just being at a feeder for the day. Then actually, just thinking out loud, with the COVID crisis that we're in, feeder watching is probably the number one best way for a first-time person to participate if they have a feeder during this year.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, we're starting to run a little short on time, but I'm hoping we can cover two more questions in a relatively brief manner. First of all, and I'm going to say in advance that this question could be an entire show, but do either of you have any quick tips on best ways to care for our local birds in the winter? And we'll have to make it rather quick, so bullet points, guys. John, go ahead, John.
I would say support and or participate in your local Audubon Society. It's always a good thing to do. You could just show up at a meeting. You don't have to donate money. All Audubon field trips are free and open to the public. There's never a charge, and you don't need to be a member. That's a good start. Bullet point.
Yeah, you'll learn a lot. One would learn a lot about birds by going to an Audubon meeting. Mm-hmm. Rich, anything to add?
I think that if you, people that, like John mentioned, if you have feeders, keeping those active. And then another great way is even getting involved with eBird. And that's a great way to learn, because John is actually one of the regional reviewers for eBird, and he will school you on your identifications and make sure that they are accurate.
So beyond eBird, what are some other good resources to start pursuing this?
There's an app, a free app called Merlin, which is helpful with identification. You can hear songs. It has a map. So that's just basically like a bird book on your phone. It's and that's a free app. It's really a nice resource.
Might be easier than a bird
book.
Thing,
sorry, Julie.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, going out with people that know birds And that's how you, you know, you can learn songs and certainly learn habitat and, you know, seasonal fluctuations.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Well, Rich, you've mentioned that the Sandpoint Bird Count is going to be on December 16th. We've heard that we've got another one December 19th. I think that was Spokane. I may have it reversed. And then a January 2nd. And we haven't, I'm not sure if you might happen to have the dates for the Bonner's Ferry and also the Coeur d'Alene counts. Rich, would you have those dates?
The count, I don't have the Coeur d'Alene count. The count, the Bonner's Ferry count is December 29th.
Okay, good. And again, let's repeat contact information. Folks can either go to audubon.org or they can contact you, Rich. Can we have? Would you mind repeating your contact info?
Absolutely, yeah. It's Rich Del Carlo. And my number is 208-290-1405.
And John, any contact info?
Right. Like I said, I'm not the organizers of those counts, but I would be happy to put anybody in touch with any of the counts between Sandpoint and Moses Lake and Pullman. So my contact number is 509-991-1637.
Okay. Well, this has been really fun. And as we go through the seasons, it's always nice to have a bird show. And sometimes we do stuff in the spring. And so we'll look forward to scheduling that with Rich and John. Maybe you can join us back in the springtime when we're looking at the transition of the seasons and maybe some migratory patterns.
Sounds great. Love it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, this has been KRFY Community Conversations with your hosts, Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Thank you for joining us this week. And we hope you'll continue listening and listen in following weeks.
Well, this wraps up another community conversation. Thanks for listening to KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org. And all of our community conversation shows are recorded and saved as podcasts on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Currently, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at high levels across our state and region. In Idaho, we are at stage 2 level of restrictions and recovery. And Bonner County is currently at the red level, the highest level for risks of impact from the COVID pandemic. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. If we help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses, and keep a 6-foot distance apart from each other. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible, and stay home if you are sick. Stay safe, and thanks for listening. And before we close, we'd like to tell you about a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to see what song you have been listening to, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page and find the playlist link. Then you can see the song you just heard. Until next week, enjoy all of our great programming, including Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long.